Welcome to week number 9 of our verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. We are still in the big book of beginnings, the book of Genesis, looking at the story of Abraham, the father of faith. We're in Genesis chapter 21, and we're going to begin today with verse 22. The story at this point is that Abraham has the son of the promise now, his son Yitzhak, that he and Sarah have been gifted from God with. And he is living in Gerar, which is the watershed that the city of Beersheba today is located upon. Back at that time, that city did not yet exist. In fact, we're about to find out how it got its original name today. Verse 22 says, "At that time, Abimelech," now Abimelech is the king of Gerar. It's probably a title. It means my father is king. "And Phicol, the commander of his army," and this apparently is another title for the head of the army of Gerar. "Those two men together said to Abraham, 'God is with you in all that you do.'" So they've come to understand over a little bit of time dealing with Abraham that everything around him goes well for him. This is God's blessing upon his life. And they want to be a part of that. Perhaps they are aware of the promise that God made to Abraham, "I will curse those who curse you and bless those who bless you." And so they want to be on the blessing side of the equation. Verse 23, "Now therefore swear to me by God that you will not deal falsely with me or with my descendants or with my posterity, but as I have dealt kindly with you, so you will deal with me and with the land where you have sojourned." So he wants this mutual non-aggression pact, this mutual assistance pact, perhaps. He wants to be in on the Abrahamic blessing. And so Abraham said back to him, "I will swear." And when Abraham reproved Abimelech about a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized, Abimelech said, "I don't know who's done this thing. You didn't tell me, and I have not heard of it until today." So they enter into this agreement, this pact. And at some point after that, there's some fracture, there's some friction between the workers of Abraham and the workers of Abimelech about a water source. And when Abraham invokes the terms of the agreement, Abimelech's response is, "This first I've heard of it." And so verse 27, "Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and the two men made a covenant. And Abraham set up 7 ewe lambs of the flock apart. And Abimelech said to Abraham, 'What is the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs that you have set apart?' And he said, 'These 7 ewe lambs you will take from my hand, that this may be a witness for you that I dug this well.'" So the dispute was about a very specific well. The two men meet where this well is located. They enter into an understanding and an agreement that this well was dug by the efforts of Abraham and his people. And Abraham sets aside 7 female ewes, ewe lambs, and gives these to Abimelech as kind of payment for the exclusive use of this well. Now, the word for oath and the word for the number 7 in Hebrew are pretty much the same word, Sheva. And so the name for a well that has been dug is Bir. So that is why verse 31 reports, therefore the place was called Be'er Sheva, because there both of them swore an oath. So they swore an oath, a Sheva. Abraham gave up seven Sheva ewe lambs, and it was all about this Be'er, this well. And so this is the origin of the name Beersheba, and you can find it on any Israeli map. It's very easily located. So they made a covenant at Beersheba, and then Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, rose up, and they returned to the land of the Philistines. Now, the use of the term Philistine here is a bit anachronistic, because in the time of Abraham, the Philistines had not yet moved in on the coastland. But in the time of Moses, who's writing these stories down, at least the first wave of Philistines had taken over that coastline, and therefore he uses that as the term for the coast where Gaza is located today. Verse 33, Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba and called there on the name of He who is the everlasting God, or the God of eternity. So Beersheba becomes one of the new Abrahamic encampments. It has a worship site that's attached to it. A tree is planted as a permanent marker, and an altar is apparently set up right next to that tree. And that is where, when he's in the area, Abraham does his worship. The worship of the one true God, the God that has no beginning. He is from eternity past. Verse 34, Abraham sojourned many days in the land of the Philistines. So time passes while he's living here in the watershed of Gerar, up at the place that is now called Beersheba. Right now it's a tent city, but over time it will become an actual walled city. Now, how much time passes? We're not altogether certain. Because the Bible, in the inspired text, does not give any specific dating information for this next event. Now, Jewish tradition, though, is that this event we're about to read of took place when Yitzhak, the son of the promise, was about 25 years of age. So if that is accurate, then a couple of decades have passed with Abraham living in Beersheba and running his sheep in that area of the world. Chapter 22, verse 1. After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, here am I. So God speaks to Abraham again after many years of quiet. And then he has an assignment for him. He said, take your son, your only son Yitzhak. Now the only son here is a reference to Yitzhak's status as the heir. Yitzhak's status as the child of promise. Because he is not the only son of Abraham. Abraham has Ishmael as well, who's living down south of Beersheba somewhere, down in that neighborhood. But here we're focusing on the fact that Yitzhak is the one that Abraham has been told the promised line is going to come. Now, why is that significant? Because at this moment, Yitzhak has not yet married, and he has no children, even though God has promised Abraham through this specific man and his family, all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed. And I'm going to keep all my promises to you about your seed living in this land, this land belonging to you, and being like the sands of the seashore and like the stars in the sky. So what he's about to ask him is going to put Abraham's faith, that is, his trust in God and God's word, to the test. Take your son, your only son, Yitzhak, or Isaac, whom you love. Go to the land of Moriah. Now, that is not the name of the land yet. It will acquire that name because of this story and over the time period of when Israel will start getting ready to go into the promised land. Offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. So north from Beersheba is a site that God has in mind where he wants Abraham to take his one-of-a-kind son, the son of the promise, and give him to God as a sacrifice, a whole burnt offering, which of course means he will have to kill him. Now, this is where the test comes in. If God tells you to do something, you are duty-bound, because he is God, to do it. But Abraham also knows that God promised that through this son, there's going to be blessings, there's going to be land promises fulfilled, there's going to be the multitude of offspring promises that have to be fulfilled. So how is God going to keep that promise if Abraham kills that son before there's any other children? And this is, I think, where the book of Hebrews becomes very important to us in understanding the thought process of Abraham at this point. Hebrews chapter number 11, written by a very Jewish person, a person who knew things Jewish. He is writing about faith, about how faith is the substance, the underpinning of things that we hope for, and the convicting evidence of things that we don't see with our own eyes. And that it was because of faith all the people of old were commended, because they trusted God at his word. When it gets to Abraham, this is what it says, Hebrews 11, 17. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Yitzhak, and he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Yitzhak shall your offspring be named. He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. So the Hebrew author, under the directive of the Holy Spirit, but also under the understanding of generations of Israeli teaching, was that Abraham, when he heard this directive from God, thought in his mind, well, the only way that God can keep his promise to me if I kill my son as a sacrifice today is he has to resurrect him from the dead. There is no other way around it. It has to happen that way. So that is the faith being acted upon by Abraham in this story in Genesis 22. Verse 3. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, took two of his young men with him and his son Yitzhak. He cut the wood for the burnt offering, and he arose, and he went to the place of which God had told him. And on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. Now, where is he going? He is going to the site of the future city of Jerusalem. It is about 50 miles or so, 50 to 60 road miles north of Beersheba. If you left late on one day and traveled that day and part of the next, and then got up the next morning on the third morning, you would arrive there on an easy trip of partial traveling on 2 days and full traveling on the middle day. So third day here, he arrives at the future site of Jerusalem. Now, what's there right now? Well, the city of Salem is there, Salem. The city that it had been apparently founded and governed by Melchizedek, the king of righteousness that Abraham has already had interaction with. So there is a city, but it's to the south of what we call the Temple Mount today. The Temple Mount, back in Canaanite times, seems to have been a grain processing area. It's set up higher than the city of Salem and would have had a prevailing wind going across it so that you could go up there and you could thrash your grain and toss it up in the air and winnow it, you know, cause the chaff to be blown off to one side because of the prevailing wind, and the heavier grain would drop down into a pile. So that seems to be what the Temple Mount was being used for back previous to the time of David. David will actually turn that grain processing area into a site of sacrifice because of the destroying angel in his time period, and it will cause David to select that exact spot as the site of the temple. Now, many people teach that it was that place that Abraham went to with his son Yitzhak. I am not altogether convinced of that. Now, Josephus, a Jewish historian, a Jewish Pharisee, who understood all the traditions of the past, he does say that it was in the region of Moriah that the temple was built. But you should keep in mind that the Temple Mount is only a small portion of a larger ridge area that is there to the north of the ancient city of Salem. And so I happen to be of the opinion that Abraham was directed to go about a half of a mile north of what we call the Temple Mount today, to a little, another little escarpment or rise upon that same ridgeline that will eventually, and again, this is in my opinion, become the site of Golgotha, or Skull Hill, and that it was on the exact site where Jesus would be crucified that Abraham was directed to take his son. So I feel that that connection, that symbolism, is much more important in this story. So on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes, and he saw the place from afar. Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come to you again." Now notice his faith. He already believes that Yitzhak will be back with him. That's because in his mind, he's convinced God cannot have me kill my son that he's made promises about that have not yet come into fulfillment, unless he resurrects him from the dead so the promises can happen. So he's laying all of his trust on God's promises here. So he tells the two guys to stay where they're at. My guess is that they're probably somewhere a little west of the city of Salem. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering. Remember, they cut it ahead of time. And he laid it on Isaac, his son. So he asks Isaac to carry the wood up the hill to the place of sacrifice. And Christians have not missed the symbolic significance of that during a long history of consideration of this story. That Jesus, whom Isaac is symbolizing here as the one-of-a-kind son of promise, is the one who carries the wood of sacrifice up the hill to Golgotha, to Mount Calvary, to Skull Hill. Jesus carried his own cross. He, meaning Abraham, took in his hand the fire and the knife, and so they both went together, both of them together. Now, Yitzhak said to his father, Abraham, "My father," and he said, "Here I am, my son." And he said, "Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" So these two have no doubt offered many sacrifices together as Isaac has grown up. If, as the Jewish tradition purports, Isaac is about 25, he is processing this whole thing and coming to the conclusion something is amiss here. Something is unusual. We've got everything we need for this sacrifice, except we didn't bring the actual sacrifice. And so he asks his father about that. Verse number 9, when they came to the place of which God had told him, so it's a very specific site. I happen to think that the genuine Golgotha is in what's called the Garden Tomb today, or right next to the Garden Tomb in Israel. It's at the backside of a bus station right now. And it's an escarpment, a little cliffside that used to have the look of a human skull to it. Some of that has caved in the last 100 years, so it's harder to see. But that's where I think they went. Now, if the tradition that focuses on the tomb of the traditional site for Roman Catholicism and Orthodox, which is the Holy Sepulchre area, then that would be where we're talking about that he went. But Abraham answers the question by a specific word or phrase. He says, "God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." So they both went on, both of them went on together. Now, the phrase, "God will see to it," that's the literal wording. God will see to it. It takes on the form of Moriel. El is God. Mori means see to it. So Moriel means God will see to it. By the time of Moses writing the book of Genesis, the people of Israel were now referring to God as Yahweh, or shortened form, Yah. So the name of this place would have also been adjusted to be Moriah. And this is where we get the term Mount Moriah, because that is the site of this sacrifice. So when they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there. He laid the wood in order and bound Yitzhak his son and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. And it should not be missed that Yitzhak is a much younger, stronger man than his father. And so he voluntarily allows himself to be bound. And so this again is another mark of the fulfillment in Jesus Christ. Jesus did not have his life taken from him. He laid it down voluntarily. That is a huge, significant teaching about the atonement. So Yitzhak allows himself to be bound. He allows himself to be put on the wood that he carried. And then Abraham reached out his hand. He took the knife to slaughter his son. You shouldn't think like all these pictures that have him raising the dagger up in the air. He's about to stab Yitzhak in the chest. That's not the way it would have been. He is being offered as a sacrifice. And the sacrificial system was always to cut the throat of the sacrifice. So Abraham took the knife in his hand and would have then stretched it out toward the throat of his son Yitzhak and was about to slice his throat. And that's when God intervenes, because God had never had an intention to establish human sacrifice. That was not the purpose here. Verse 11, the angel of He Who Is called out to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here I am. And he said, Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing that you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. So this was a test to see, did Abraham trust God? And the book of Hebrews again reminds us he did. He believed that if he went through this, God had to resurrect him from the dead. So Abraham lifted up his eyes. He looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. And Abraham went and took the ram, offered it as a burnt offering instead of his son. And so Abraham called the name of that place, He Who Is Will Provide. And it is said to this day, on the mount of He Who Is, it shall be provided. And so this is the way that the promise is fulfilled in Jesus later. On this site, God provides the Lamb.